You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, July 13th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Florida breaks the daily case record. New York has its first day without a coronavirus death since March. Meanwhile, no one trusts the White House on coronavirus. And the White House now making sure that no one will trust Anthony Fauci on it. The Arctic is melting down. And bankrupt fracking companies are spewing methane so that they can afford executive bonuses. 32% of U.S. households missed their July housing payment. With a looming eviction crisis, which could leave 28 million people homeless. And as Trump's recovery sputters, a new wave of layoffs, as the loan forgiveness and unemployment benefits expire. Trump's Supreme Court loss still doesn't mean we'll see his taxes before Election Day. And in the wake of Stone's commutation, Nancy Pelosi is really adamant that they will limit future presidents' commutations, while Bill Barr plots an October surprise. And the wonderful story of Tucker Carlson's head writer, fired for producing racist content for a non-Tucker Carlson outlet. White House is now seeking to trap its own leakers. Commerce Department Inspector General slams the department for siding with Trump over Sharpiegate. Lastly, the Washington, D.C. football team drops its name. All this and more on today's program. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Thank you for joining us. Glad to be back. I mean, at least to some extent. Certainly feeling better than I did before vacation. Thank you for tuning into the show over the week. We got a lot of great feedback on the interview with Stephanie Kelton. That was on Friday. Her book has now been a bestseller for a month. And if you missed that interview, go back and listen to that interview from last week on Friday. You will not be disappointed. A really important interview. This is one that you send around to your reluctant uncles and aunts and mothers and fathers, the ones who are still espousing the stuff from the 90s about fiscal responsibility, et cetera, et cetera. Check it out. She's been on the program for, and I had looked it up. It hadn't occurred to me for about 8 years. I think was the first interview that we've had. And it's interesting to listen how the ideas have developed a little bit. But, you know, 8 years ago, it was a project that she wanted to get the word out about MMT. And it certainly seems to be influencing the thinking of our policymakers in this country and in some instances abroad. We also had a great interview on trade wars being class wars by, was it Mike Tillis, I think is his name? Michael Tillis?
Pettis.
That theory is in some way founded on some principles from MMT. Check that one out. And I also have to say, I mean, I liked all the interviews, but The interview with Greg Mitchell. Did you hear that one, Matt? Did you listen to that one?
Remind me which one that was.
That was the one about he basically uses a movie that was first the catalyst of this movie by Hollywood in the mid to late 40s was by some members of the Manhattan Project wanting to get their side of the story out because they were upset at how the atom bomb was used against Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And they wanted to warn the country essentially about a nuclear arms race. And the movie ended up getting bastardized, but it basically tells a story of how much the U.S. lied to its own citizens in many respects about the bomb and about the necessity for it. I mean, I think people still don't realize today that the idea that we killed hundreds of thousands of largely women and children was the need of which was highly questionable, particularly with the second bomb, but also with the first. Highly, highly dubious. And there's, but it's a fascinating history. And Mitchell has written a couple of books on this, and in different ways he tells the same story. But it's fascinating. I would go back and listen to those, folks, if you're so inclined. Don't sleep on those, as the kids say. I hope everyone is well. Still in the midst of obviously a pandemic, it appears that we will be still for an extended period of time. 132,000 dead, 2.5 million cases, and counting, growing exponentially in some of the southwestern states, including obviously Florida, Arizona, Texas, California, reports. And the thing is that, you know, places like Houston are not national media centers. So you don't hear the stories of ICUs filling up there. You don't hear it in half a dozen hospitals in southern Florida. I mean, this is going to be an increasing problem. The number of deaths, I think we're around now 700 a day, which is up from July 4th by about 200 almost. Remember peak when New York was the epicenter was closer to 2,100 deaths a day. But just to put all this in perspective, and the big question, of course, is, you know, what are we going to do when, in the fall in terms of, well, this is a big question for those of us who have children or those of us who work in schools, I guess. I don't work in a school, but I do have children. What's going to happen when the weather turns, at least in terms of the Northeast? What's going to happen? I mean, these are all questions and there are no answers. Because the federal government, run by Donald Trump, has made a concerted effort to put out confusing information, misinformation, no information. They just think that they can ignore this thing and just blow through it. And so far, that's not working. In Florida, 15,000 new cases a day. There are reports that it's starting to migrate from, and I haven't seen the latest average age, but that average age of case of infection is going up in Florida, which is highly problematic. So what do you do if you're Governor Ron DeSantis and you're convinced? And we should say this, and this is really important. And David Dayen, of course, has written something on this because it's a topic. But the seeds of what we're seeing in Florida, in Texas, in Arizona, to some extent in California, were sown when the CARES Act did not have funding for states and municipalities. And remember, these are states also that don't have income taxes or diminished ones, particularly Florida, Texas. They get most of their money through sales taxes. Well, you're not going to get sales taxes if you're not going to have people going out and buying stuff. And so there was a considerable amount of pressure on them. And these are not strong-willed individuals. These are not statesmen that they're growing down there. Ron DeSantis is not someone who is going to put anything above his own political career. So what do you get in Florida? You get stuff like, and this is going to sound insane to you because it's insane. In the middle of a pandemic, what are we going to do? I'm going to Disney World.
Welcome home.
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 Welcome home, everyone.
Welcome, citizens.
I honestly, I feel like that is, you just took a clip out of a movie, some type of futuristic movie, you know, where you know, and this is where it pans out to the TV and then some guy, you know, unplugs himself from the wall or something and then goes, you know, it's like a Blade Runner or something like that.
Well, I mean, honestly, at this point, magic is about as good a cure for COVID in this country as, you know, testing and everything. We're putting about as much faith in that.
I mean, the problem, I don't even know if the problem with that, it's been a long time since I've been to Disney World. The problem, it seems to me, is that it's not even necessarily, you know, people walking around outside at Disney World, they're all wearing masks. And I imagine the implication is like, you can come if you've got a mask. I mean, I think we've seen by the lack of, bump in infections from the protests in New York that if you're outside and you're wearing a mask, that it is difficult to contract. The problem is, how are all these people going to get to Disney World? Where are they going to stay? Like all the ancillary things. I can't remember how many closed spaces you're in at Disney if you're wearing your masks, you know, in like, I don't know, it's a small world. I mean, do you really want to go into a ride saying it's a small world in the middle of a pandemic?
I mean, the lines are long enough to begin with. I mean, they might not be long with a whole bunch of people not there for the pandemic, but I can't imagine they're going to get out of hand. I can imagine they're going to get out of hand really fast. I mean, yeah. What does it say about America that we need to open up Disney World? I mean, basically, because we're embarrassed because China reopened theirs like months ago.
Ah.
And I feel like that's a prestige thing and we're failing.
we are failing.
Communism is better for Disney than capitalism is. At
there
this
you
stage,
go.
Folks. Sorry.
They're sorry. Oh, well, look at that. I've got a cup of what I'm about to talk about right now. Folks, you know, proper hydration. Crucial for your immune system, can boost your immunity. It's also just generally healthy for you, particularly summer months up here. I go way too long without drinking any water, way too long. Well, with Liquid IV, you got the fastest, most efficient way to stay hydrated. I will sometimes, doing a little work outside, I'll forget. I'll come in. Oh, no, I'm going to get a throbbing headache like within a half an hour after I stop. And what I've been doing, leaning pretty heavily on my Liquid IV. And of course, I also, it is now a regular, I got it right here. I keep it right on my desk. My Energy Multiplier Liquid IV, Lemon Ginger. I make a bottle of that every morning and I have my coffee, and they sort of like balance each other out. It's coffee. Obviously dehydrates you a little bit, I think, because of the caffeine. Liquid IV contains 5 essential vitamins. It has more vitamin C than an orange and more potassium than a banana. One serving of Liquid IV provides the same hydration as drinking 2 to 3 bottles of water alone. It's healthier than sugary sports drinks. There's no artificial flavors. There's no artificial preservatives. Less sugar than an apple. It has cellular transport technology. Not sure exactly. I know exactly what that is, but it works. Liquid IV, it's effective. The optimal ratio of glucose, sodium, potassium delivers water and nutrients into the bloodstream. Plus, Liquid IV is donating 2.3 million servings in response to COVID-19. They're sending products to hospitals, first responders, food banks, veterans, active military. I love this stuff because it's not too sweet. And I got to tell you, the energy multiplier, it works big time. When I used to take airplanes, I would bring it with me. If I drink a little too much, I'll take one at night. I'll take one in the morning. I'm all set. Liquid IV is available nationwide at Costco and Target, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com. Use the code MajorityRep at checkout. That's 25% off of anything you order when it's promo code MajorityRep at liquidiv.com. Get better hydration today at liquidiv.com, promo code MajorityRep. And also, not a great time to go out clothes shopping, but one of the problems you have, obviously, when you're shopping for clothes online, you got a fit issue. You also got, frankly, like, how do you, you know, I'm a clothes browser. I don't like to go into the shopping place, but I like to browse for clothes. Well, how do you deal with both those problems? For me, Stitch Fix. It's a personal styling company. It makes getting the clothes that you want totally effortless. It's a completely different way to shop. It's all about you, and it's all about you every time. To get started, go to stitchfix.com/majority. You set up your profile, and what happens is they deliver great looks personalized just for you in your colors, your styles, and your budget. You go in, you say, like, I'm an autumn. Well, you don't say that. You say, like, I like this color, that color. These are the type of shirts I wear. Checkered shirts, button down, soft collar, whatever it is. You don't have to exactly get my style, although probably couldn't hurt you. You pay $20 for a styling fee for each fix, and it's credit towards anything you keep. You schedule at any time. There's no subscription required. You're not obligated to do it over and over again. Plus, shipping, returns, and exchanges are easy and free. Stitch Fix does the hard work for you. They make great styles effortless for everybody, men, women, kids. For me personally, my big scores were the those Chukka boots, right? Brendan, is that the Chukka boots?
Yep,
the
Chukka. Right. Yep.
Or am I saying that wrong? Chukka.
I say Chukka, but
all right,
you know.
The Chukka ones, the penguin ones. And I got that sort of like jeans, but they're, you know, nicer material. I don't know how to, I'm not good with, that's the thing. That's why I like this place, is I don't have to really think about it. They're Flag and Anthem, the 5-pocket straight pants. The 5th pocket's the little tiny one where you put your change in or whatever it is. And then I got a flannel shirt too that Milo, of course, stole immediately. She's into flannel now. And then I also, they sent me a mock turtleneck and I was like, man, beep, beep. I don't want it. Send it back. Super easy. I'm not into to mock turtlenecks. And now they know. Get started today at stitchfix.com/majority. You're going to get 25% off when you keep everything in your fix. That's stitchfix.com/majority for 25% off when you keep everything in your fix. Stitchfix.com/majority. Check it out, folks. I know you'll enjoy it. All right. Let's get into a couple other things that are going on. I mean, like, and maybe this is a little bit myopic for me, but this is the big question. The implications of school in terms of, obviously, like, having a generation of kids who are going to have significant deficiencies and their education is highly problematic for a society. And I got news for you. We are, you know, to the extent that this is a competition, it's not even a question of competition. It is doable. We are in, we don't seem to be capable of doing much at this point relative to the rest of the world. And I don't care who you're talking about. New Zealand, Europe, Vietnam, it doesn't matter. We're doing it worse. And the implications, I know a lot of folks who listen to the show, watch the show, don't have children. No, a decent amount do. One, it obviously frees up people to work more. You're talking about less stress. But for many children, specifically in the context of, like, let's say, New York, where they get their food, where they get protection from any problems that might be going on at home, is school. It shouldn't be that way. We should have a better system for this. But that's the one that we have right now. And there is just a tremendous amount of questions around whether it is safe for children and safe for parents and safe for teachers to send children to school. And it could be different for elementary school kids in terms of the risk reward situation than it is for high schoolers. I'm of a bunch of minds of this, and it changes every day in my mind. But we do know, like everything else, like we've seen already in terms of deaths and infections and in terms of job losses, it will, the decisions that we make in this, the people who will suffer the most are people who are of lower income, working class income. Those are the people who are going to suffer the most, and those kids. And so what can we expect from the federal government in terms of guidance? I understand every location is different, and maybe the federal government can't say, you know, school in this district in Iowa should open. But what the federal government could do is develop benchmarks for opening, standards for staying open, criteria for closing back down, funding to make those standards for opening possible. And they are doing, out of those three or four things, zero of them. And here to prove that is Betsy DeVos, the Secretary of Education. They send her out with exactly no message on this, but they feel compelled to have someone deliver this no message. Here she is with Dana Bash. And Dana Bash, you can see, is just sort of like, it's frustrating because she's like, I don't understand, what are we supposed to be doing here?
To what happens if there's an outbreak? What are experts telling you about the appropriate level of transmission for a school before it has to shut down?
Well, I know that that's an area that the CDC is helping to provide further insight into. I can't, as a non-physician or a non-medical expert, tell you precisely what to do in the case of one child in a classroom or five children in a classroom. But the key is, every school should have plans for that situation to pivot and ensure that kids can continue learning at a distance if they have to for a short period of time.
You're the Secretary of Education. Pivot. You're asking students to go back. So why do you not have guidance?
This is what she just said. Okay. Now, she is a member of the cabinet. What do you do? What are the criteria to shut down a school? If everybody comes back, like, you're saying it's safe to go in. So what defines not safe if things happen? I don't know, but I do know this. The school is going to have to figure it out. That's what we get from the Secretary of Education. The only thing that she said there that was even remotely related to education was that she said the word school.
I like when they use those marketing buzzwords like pivot. Well, pivot in that case. Like, okay.
All you got to do is pivot. We'll pivot. All right, let's pivot back to the video.
Why do you not have guidance on what a school should do just weeks before you want those schools to reopen, and what happens if it faces an outbreak?
You know, there's really good examples that have been utilized in the private sector and in and elsewhere, also with frontline workers and hospitals. And all of that data and all of that information and all of those examples can be referenced by school leaders.
But I'm not hearing a plan from the Department of Education.
Pause
do you have a plan?
Pause it 1 second. I want you to go back. But do you realize what she just said? What do schools do in that situation? And she basically said they should Google it. They should Google it. There's examples out there of people who have been successful. And I may or may not know of those.
What are the private sector examples she's talking about where schools had to respond to people being infected with coronavirus?
I have no idea, but I mean, I'm trying to give her the benefit of the doubt. That these actually exist. And she's basically saying, now, we don't have a collection of these examples. I'm saying, Google it.
That have been utilized in the private sector and in and elsewhere, also with frontline workers and hospitals. And all of that data and all of that information and all of those examples can be referenced by school leaders.
But I'm not hearing a plan from the Department of Education. Do you have a plan for what students and schools should do?
So, schools should do what's right on the ground at that time for their students and for their situation. There is no one uniform approach that we can take or should take nationwide.
But can I just ask you,
school in the city of Detroit are very, in my home state, in the city of Detroit, would be very different than that of a school in the Upper Peninsula
of Michigan. And that's the point. That's completely understandable.
Mm-hmm. Home state.
But you are arguing over and over that they should handle this on a local level. But at the same time, as the Secretary of Education, you are trying to push them to do a one-size-fits-all approach, which is go back and reopen schools. You can't have it both ways.
I am urging all schools to be to open and to be providing their students a full-time education.
So, I mean, yes, Dana Bash discovered the complete, I wouldn't even call it hypocrisy, contradiction in what she's saying. She's saying, I am saying all schools should open, do a full-time education, but I also want to make it clear it's not one size fits all. And but really the issue here is they're not providing any one iota of help here, of structure, of principles, of like, you know, You can, these are the benchmarks when you close down. These are the things you should do. These are the things you shouldn't do. Not even suggestions. You're just telling them to go out and Google.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, it's like, this is insanity. Here's the problem too, is that it is almost impossible to divine exactly what the risk is. And even if you had a chart that said, like, you're in a community where there's this many infections and this many people dying, it's not even a question of, like, having the right answer with that cross-reference. It's just very difficult to have a real sense of what the danger is of children transmitting, catching. I don't think that from a physical standpoint, if a kid gets it, an elementary school kid gets it, that there is much evidence that is going to be fatal to them. And for younger children, it appears like there is no, so far, to the extent that we can tell, there is no long-term damage. The problem is that we still don't know how dangerous of a vector these kids can be. We don't know what the danger is to teachers. Now, you could set up a situation where the teachers are basically at arm's length from the kids. Maybe they're behind, you know, some type of, you know, protective device. Maybe you bring in younger assistants to, you know, that the teachers say, like, can you go over and tell Johnny to, you know, be careful with it? I don't know. But there's no resources. There's no funding. There's none of this can happen. And it's all happening at a time where you have cities and towns and states cutting because they have no funding. And we are barreling towards this. This, you know, we're 5 or 6 weeks out, you know, max in some areas from starting schools. In others, you know, maybe we're about 8 weeks out from starting schools, and there's absolutely no guidance, no help, nothing.
And this is becoming emblematic of the entire response, right? We're hearing the same stories about testing shortages, testing turnaround, and states being like, we need these resources and we're not getting anything from the federal government. Meanwhile, the federal government is saying that the states aren't doing an adequate job in providing X, Y, and Z in every aspect of this,
yep,
you know, situation.
And I'll tell you, the, you know, every day, I am determined. I really want to send Saul back to school. I'm not, my son's going into second grade. I think he needs the socialization. I am worried. I'm not quite in the crosshairs in terms of, you know, I think if you're over 75 and you get it, you're, you know, the death rate is maybe double digits. 10 or 11% chance of dying, maybe a little more. I'm not sure what the latest numbers are, but I'm getting up there. I don't know that I would send my daughter, who's headed into 10th grade, because of the nature of the school is much more crowded. Kids that age can contract it easier, it appears, than elementary school kids. But this morning, I get up, I look at the news, a story out of Syracuse. A daycare center, 16 people got it, including, I don't know, half a dozen kids. And part of it is because this administration, and I say this administration because there's not a single state that is capable of setting up a nationwide testing regime that could be efficient. They're just not capable of doing it. And it is not profitable and worthwhile to the private industry to do so. This is explicitly something that the federal government should be doing, is best suited to do. And now, like you say, we have this lag time with testing. And in fact, in this story, I think it was out of Syracuse, mother trying to get back to work, bringing her kid to daycare, got a test on a Monday, brought her kid in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, because the test wasn't coming back for a week, and she thought she had allergies. Now, you think you have allergies, and you know the test is coming back in 6 hours, you stay home. You think you have allergies, and you know the test is coming back in 24 hours, all right, you'll bite the bullet. You'll stay safe. Keep the kid at home. You won't go into work. But if you think it's 7 days, and you got allergies, eh, and the next thing you know, 16 people have it. And the whole point of the shutdown was to build capacity to deal with this going forward. And it's all been squandered. Every single bit of it has been completely squandered. And all the fever dreams of, you know, we're going to have a vaccination by, you know, August, we'll be fine. There are now, you know, some mixed reports as to, you know, how much antibodies you get, how effective the antibodies are in terms of your ability to get reinfected. We don't know. The only thing that we could do to address this is use the time to prepare ourselves. And we did not do that. And by we, I mean the federal government, our tax dollars, did not do that because we have a lunatic who is the president of the United States. And we have a significant portion of the country who are also lunatics. Now, fortunately, Donald Trump wore a mask the other day, and apparently that's all it takes for millions of people to go like, oh, actually, maybe masks are a good idea. But that's where we're at.
It's a fast-paced version of the climate change game, denial. Like, we just see the effects of it immediately. They're used to denying this stuff and acting like it's never going to hit the fan.
Exactly. And here's a clip. Here's a clip of this is a Wisconsin Representative Glenn Grotham. He is, I think he may even be the, is he a leading figure in the Republican Party in Wisconsin? I think he's like, I don't know if he's a chair or something, but here he is addressing the Republican. I have a buddy from Wisconsin. He was driving up in northern Wisconsin. I think he was up there visiting relatives. Stops at a gas station, wearing a mask. Only one apparently wearing a mask there. Pickup truck drives by, slows down, rolls down the window, yells Trump 2020, drives off. We have a broken country. Here is Wisconsin Representative Glenn Grothman.
It's time to talk about Donald J. Trump.
Okay.
God.
Yep. Okay.
Never gonna wear a mask. Do we have the Vic Berger version of that? Yeah. So that we can just mix in a little bit of laughter with our crying.
Here we go.
I mean, nobody works harder. So please, round of applause for Congressman Glenn Grothman.
Well, at least they're distancing.
Oh, my God.
Well, it's time to talk about Donald J. Trump.
Oh, God.
Yep. Okay. We all know that in the next 4 months, we have friends, we have children, we have grandchildren, we have spouses who are going to have to go get to vote for Donald John Trump.
All right. People go check out Vic Berger's. Oh, my gosh.
One president has stood up and said.
All right. Wow. There it is. I mean, this is, I don't know, it's sheer insanity. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Let's play this clip just to remind people of just like, you know, what we're seeing here. You know, Donald Trump wears the mask, but the damage is done. I mean, let's be honest. You're going to have multiple states in the country that are going to have to go through a horrific event until they adopt mask wearing. And at least in the Southwest, you have a situation where maybe they will start wearing masks. Maybe people will start to social distance more. And then we'll get into the fall. Things will cool off in terms of temperatures. They won't be inside as much. They will stay outside through much of the winter, and they can in these areas. And we're going to probably suffer the opposite, I would imagine, in the Northeast to some extent. People are going to start getting cocky. They're going to be used to going out and socializing, even though it's going to be outside. And then we're going to get into the fall and the winter months. Maybe school adds part of this problem. And then we're going to be in a problematic situation again. All of this is to say that what we need is a government response, a federal government response, because concurrent with all these things happening in the fall, we will also be in the midst of a massive economic recession or depression. There's a certain inevitability right now. And it just, you know, again, we're still in some type of like state of shock where everybody's just assuming it's not going to be a problem. But remember, evictions start shortly. Moratoriums start running out. The Paycheck Protection Program, all of that funding basically ends in the within a couple of weeks. And we're going to have, this is the other thing that is not being reported very much. You can find it. The CLOs, you remember CDOs, right? Those collateral. What do the CDOs stand for? The derivatives, like. But the CLOs are basically the same thing, but they're commercial loans. And these commercial loans, many of them, were already scheduled to reset late 2020 and early 2021. And they're going to reset at higher interest rates. And there's going to be less cash to pay them off. We're going to have some real problems, folks. Meanwhile, let's just look back for a moment. It being now mid-July, which I believe is like, when is Memorial Day? That's late May, correct?
Yes.
It was a while ago.
So that was like almost 6 weeks ago. Let's tune in with the godly Mike Pence as to his divine sense of where things were going. This is back in April. Vice President Pence is telling Geraldo Rivero his sense of where we're headed in terms of the coronavirus. This was the CNN K-File found this.
Do you think I'll be on my boat and fishing in early June, Mr. Vice President?
I think, honestly, if you look at the trends today, that I think by Memorial Day weekend, we will largely have this coronavirus epidemic behind us.
From your lips to God's ears.
State and local officials will begin to reopen activities. You're going to see states in the days ahead here begin to do that. But the key for President Trump, for all of us, is we want to do it in a safe and responsible way. We don't want a resurgence. And we think that the key to that is the phased approach the president outlined to the nation and to the governors last week.
Yeah, it didn't work out so well. In fact, let's listen to Brett Giroir. He is the COVID task force test czar. Is he? I think he was the former test czar because I don't think he's no longer has that position. I think he's just now Secretary of Health and Human Services, I believe, because they basically decided we don't need a testing czar because we're not going to help with the testing anyways. And so here he is on ABC this week. This is 6 weeks after Vice President Pence said, we're basically going to roll this thing up. 6 weeks after the time that Vice President Pence said it would be rolled up.
Say those positivity levels in the hot states are leveling off at a very high level, a significantly high level. That means we're likely to see the death rate increase even more over the next few weeks, doesn't it?
So look, that's a leading indicator. We expect hospitalizations to continue to go up. What I mean a leading indicator, that's the first thing you see. And when it levels off, it's got to level off before it goes down. We do expect and are planning for and are surging people and everything else, but we do expect hospitalizations to go up. At the peak in April, we were at about 85,000. Right now, we're at 63,000, but we do expect those to go up. And unfortunately, even though the mortality rate, your chances of dying if you get COVID, are way reduced than they were before because we know how to care for you better. We have remdesivir. We have steroids. Even though the death rate, if you get it, is going down, your chances of surviving are much better. We do expect deaths to go up. If you have more cases, more hospitalizations, we do expect to see that over the next 2 or 3 weeks before this turns around. It's starting to turn now, but we won't reap the benefits of that for a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Someone tell the vice president. This is going to go down in history as the as one of the sort of greatest self-owns. I don't know how else to articulate this.
Well, I often think of it how I remember learning about the Dust Bowl and stuff like that, and basically just complete government failure until we just had to figure out how we'd to irrigate land better. And this just feels like something, yeah, it would be, I mean, probably wiped out of the history books after 40 years, but for those first 40 years, it's going to be a very good lesson for kids.
That's right. And then we'll forget it all over again.
Yep.
All right, folks, going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program. Hey, just an update. We're sending, I think, close to, at this point, $2,000. Pretty close, right? Maybe not total. Somewhere between $1,500 and $2,000 for the limited edition.
I'm losing it, bro.
T-shirts. The phrase coined by John Benjamin.
I'm losing it, bro.
He spent a long time trying to come up with that. And to honor his work in coming up with that quote, we put it on a T-shirt, a Majority Report T-shirt, and all the proceeds, 100% of the proceeds above cost. You know, of course, it's a union shop, and it's American made clothing, but everything above cost goes to SkidRow.org, the Skid Row Trust in L.A. that helps. Literally thousands of unhoused folks, both in terms of housing and in terms of just dealing with stuff. Also, our masks continue to sell like hotcakes or like masks. I think we may even have to redo that. And all the proceeds from that goes to the Northwest Immigration Center. And we're sending them a huge chunk of change. I'm super psyched about that. And then, of course, you can get hats and you get mugs and you get other shirts at shop.majorityreportradio.com. Also, pick up the Majority Report app. When you have the Majority Report app, you can listen to the AM Quickie. You can listen to the show. If you're a member, you can sign in and you can get you can search the archives super easy. And we send out a notification on what's going to be on today's show. So check that out at majorityapp.com. And as always, it's our members that make this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. So check that out. And
I just got some mock-ups for new merch, actually. This
really?
Morning. Head out, hot off the press.
Also pencils? Pencils? I'm getting a lot of grief about carpenter's pencils.
You shall get no more grief, I believe.
I love it. I'm psyched for that. I'm going to start just, that's how I'm regularly going to write with a carpenter pencil. Folks, also, check out, TMBS. What, Matt, do you have any idea what's on, TMBS this week?
Yes, I do. Just give me one second here. I have it right here. It's not, we have Robert McKenzie on corporate monopolies and media, the present and history. So, should be interesting.
Yes, I've interviewed McChesney many, many times. He's out of Wisconsin, I believe.
Mm.
And maybe University of Madison. Yes, he's written a lot about that over the years. So check that out. That should be a lot of fun. You can find that at patreon.com/TMBS or on YouTube, youtube.com/The Michael Brooks Show. Also, don't forget to check out Nomi Key's show. She's doing interviews with a lot of people about, you know, we're getting close to election time, folks. I think we're something like 50 days off before absentee ballots for the general election. 4 months off until everybody votes. And then probably 8 months until President Trump concedes defeat if he loses. Mm-hmm. Maybe. We'll see. But check out the Nomiki Show. You can find that at patreon.com/TheNomikiShow or youtube.com, The Nomiki Show. And Jamie, what's happening on the Intifada? How was your vacation, Jamie?
Oh, it was so chill. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right. I did a night in a tiny house. Turns out that I'm really good at glamping. I always thought I would be.
Wait, if you're in a tiny house, is that really glamping?
Well, like the bathroom and the shower are outside.
Mm. Okay.
It's technically glamping.
It counts. It turns
out bathroom. Oh, I don't want to get too explicit, but I'm curious.
It's like a sawdust toilet.
Okay.
One of those outhouses. I don't know. It was lovely. It was delightful. Living the millennial dream in a tiny house. I went to the beach a few times. That was delightful. Went swimming in the rain. It was really nice. Hung out with some friends. Read. I logged off for like a day and a half.
That's
got,
good.
Got a good chunk of reading done. Feel like I could do more. I could do more relaxing though.
You know what occurred to me, like on Friday of last week, is that I would like a 2-week vacation.
Right? Because you know, it almost takes a whole week just to get in the vacation mindset.
It totally does. Honestly, it takes me like a Wednesday or Thursday. I'm like, oh my God, I don't feel like my whole body's clenched up. And then I had one more day. And but yes. All right. That's what are you gonna do? Maybe Joe Biden will turn us into France and we'll get 6 weeks off in August.
That'd be pretty cool, huh?
That would not be bad. In the meantime, Jamie, what's happening with the Antifada?
Well, this past week, we released an episode with returning guest Brandon Sutton. Viewers of this show may recognize him from the Majority Report, pretty bad lefty on Twitter. We talked about Kanye 2020. We talked a little bit about the musical Hamilton, which is bad. We talked about the rebellion for Black lives, radicalizing the libs, and why the DSA should have more game nights. So check that out. Also, this week, we have a new History is a Weapon coming with Sean KB and Matt Chrisman of Chapo Trap House. This is a two-parter on conspiracy theories, folks. They're going super deep. So I'm excited to hear what they have to say, because Matt's had some pretty good rants on Instagram lately. And that'll be out on Wednesday. We're doing the first part for free on Wednesday, second part for patrons on Friday. But as always, if you don't have any money, just email us and we'll send it to you. Oh, also, my panel at the Socialism Conference was postponed due to technical difficulties. Yeah, they couldn't run three streams at once. It was apparently they'd never done it before. It was tricky. So it's going to be this Friday, I believe. I'll post the info. I was all psyched up to do it. I was all nervous. It was on the 4th of July. I just wanted to get it over with so I could like go have fun, you know, watch all the CIA fireworks going off around the neighborhood. But it got postponed, and now I have panel blue balls, and now I like don't even feel like it anymore. But I'm sure it'll be great. I'll get back in the mood. It's fine.
Oh, been there, Matt. What's on? What's happening in Literary Hangover?
I did a couple afternoon streams last week, twitch.tv/literary hangover, and released the final installment of our reading series on George Orwell's Lion and the Unicorn, which is George Orwell writing during World War II about how patriotism is compatible with socialism, which is actually relevant to a lot of ongoing arguments on the left. And Orwell had a take on it that I think, you know, is objectionable in certain ways, but interesting. So you can check that out for patrons. And the first part is available on the free feed.
That does sound interesting.
All right, folks, number 646-257-3920. I have turned the phone machine on. I am now revving up our IM. I will take your IMs. You can IM the show through the app at majorityapp.com. See you in the fun half.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd,
don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance. My first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabs.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
You think I might be a Nazi?
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.